Where marriage, the government says marriage is legal between a man and man. It does not matter when it comes to what God says, because God's law takes priority. Now, that leads to other challenges. And so it seems to me that the church must reclaim biblical marriage and divorce. In other words, don't farm out what God says about marriage to the world and just accept what the government says. We need to be mindful that as a church, we need, and as a Christian group of people and as Christian families, we need to teach that what God says matters. And so I can foresee in the future that as the world opens and expands, who can get married, who is married, and that the church is going to have to continue to define more and more what the church accepts as a scriptural, legitimate marriage, and also what the church accepts as a scriptural or legitimate divorce. Now, other countries, in many ways, have separated the civil and religious. And sometimes there'll be a religious ceremony, and maybe they don't get the civil ceremony for some time, or maybe they can't afford it, but they go through a religious ceremony where the church recognizes it, the people go into marriage, and then the civil is just an act of government later on, or maybe even before. It is God's recognition of marriage that is important. Now, what does God view and think about marriage? And this is some foundational things, but I think it's important for us to review them. In the first place, God's definition of marriage is marriage is between a man and a woman. In Genesis chapter 2, verses 18 through 25 that Don read for us, in the beginning, God created them male and female. And after he had created them male and female, notice verse 18, he created them first male and female because there was not a helper fit or comparable for Adam. That is, God didn't create another man for Adam. God also understood that in all of the kingdom of the animal world, there was not another helper fit for him. And so God created Eve, woman, specifically for Adam and for them to be able to join together in this marriage union so that they could become the basis, the foundational unit of society and the foundational unit of the family. And God points out that this union is to be monogamous, a one flesh union. It is also to be a cleaving union wherein they leave father and mother and are joined to their wife, and they become one flesh, verse 24. But it's also to be an intimate union wherein they're able to share one another's most open and intimate details, which is figuratively described for us and physically described for us when it says that they were both naked and were not ashamed. Now, Jesus comes along, and just like man does, man over the years had messed it all up. And Moses has had to make some laws restricting marriage and things. Jews had many laws. The Romans had laws. All these things had been done over the thousands of years. But then Jesus comes, and Jesus is giving his teachings, his commandments for marriage. And in Matthew chapter 19, Jesus is asked about divorce. He's asked about marriage. And Jesus says, responding to them, "Have you not read that at the beginning, he who created them made them male and female and said, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined or hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they no longer are two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate." Jesus says, I want you to know that God created them in the beginning, and that God joins a man and woman together. That it is not just the legal ceremony, but it is God who is involved in pledging and in joining two willful partners who desire to enter into marriage together. And so God joins them together. Marriage is between a man and a woman. But notice throughout the Bible we also find about marriage. And this is so important in our culture, and what Christians teach about this is very countercultural today, is that the sexual relationship should be defined, or should be confined to the marriage relationship. There's many verses that would teach this. I want to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, where Paul, writing to the Corinthians, speaks about this idea. And the Corinthians had a view that if their body was hungry, then they gave it food. Well, when their body had sexual desire, then let's just get that gratified as well. And so they justified, just because we can meet our physical needs for food, then we should be able to meet our sexual needs. And Paul said, that's not right. Paul would say, as he describes them, verse number 15, do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a prostitute? Never. Do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one body with her? For it is written, the two shall become one flesh. Paul, in referring to the marriage union. But he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. Flee from sexual immorality. For every sin a person commits is outside the body, but sexual immoral person sins against his own body. In Hebrews chapter 12, it talks about how the marriage bed is undefiled, but adulterers and fornicators God will judge. The world says sex is about pleasure. Sex is about gratifying your own rights and desires. God says sex is a beautiful thing that He created to draw a man and woman together within the confines of marriage. And like a fire, when it is outside of the boundaries of marriage, it creates all kinds of problems internally, emotionally, spiritually, and also physically for our lives. And so we must understand that the sexual relationship is confined to marriage. The next thing we must know is that God intended marriage to be for life. In Matthew chapter 19, Jesus clearly goes back to this definition of marriage when Jesus says that what God has put together, let not man put asunder. Jesus, throughout that context, though we often read it looking at it as what is Jesus saying about divorce, Jesus is saying we should not be trying to find how to get out of marriage, but we should rather be trying to find how to stay in marriage. In other words, Jesus wants us to know that we should focus on our marriage. Marriages are not just to be discarded, but marriages involve a commitment for life. Probably the plainest passage on this truth is Romans chapter 7, where Paul would write in that occasion this truth, this statement. Do you not know, brothers, for I am speaking to those who know the law, that the law is binding on a person so long as he lives. For a married woman is bound by law to her husband while he lives. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law of marriage. And so marriage is intended for life. And finally, Matthew 19:9. We'll turn back to Matthew 9 and read it, that the only permissible reason for divorce and remarriage is fornication. You see, Jesus says that I understand the sexual relationship is so important in marriage, and I understand the intimacy there, that when it is violated and it is involved in an adulterous relationship, someone is involved in that, then I will allow that person to put away that guilty party who's been involved in that immorality, and then that one who puts away his spouse or her spouse is free to contract another marriage. Matthew chapter 19, verse 9. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. In Mark's account and in Luke's account, you do not get the exception clause. You just get that whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. That's the basic statement. In other words, whoever divorces and marries another commits adultery. Matthew chapter 19:9, Matthew chapter 5, verse 32, tell us that there's one exception to that truth, to that rule. When there is fornication, when there is adultery, this is God's definition of marriage. Now, the world's going to say all kinds of different things. We need to understand the foundation. I know there's all kinds of issues and questions that we can raise, but we can't answer any of those questions unless we first understand the foundation. And so as our world changes, and our world changes its laws regarding divorce, as our world changes its laws regarding marriage, the church must come back to, what does God say? Now, I understand that I've taken most of my time on this point, but I do want to say a few other things. We need to recognize the purpose God put in marriage. The purpose God put in marriage. The first point I want to say, and this is from Genesis 2, but I want to read Malachi 2 as well. That is that marriage is intended for procreation. That is that still, and I understand, and in many ways here we're always talking about it, the ideal. And the ideal is not always possible in every given circumstance. Sometimes there's problems because of the ideal can't be met because there's been a death. Sometimes it can't be met because there's been sin. Sometimes the ideal is not able to be met. But the ideal and God's desire is for two parents to be raising children together in their home as father and mother. And that one of the purposes of marriage is for producing, Malachi chapter 2, verse 15, godly offspring. And so because we're supposed to be producing godly offspring, Malachi says, we must guard ourselves in our spirit and let none of you be faithless or unfaithful to the wife of your youth. In other words, because we have a purpose of raising up children to love the Lord, we don't betray our wife or our husband. We want to be faithful to them. We want to love them. And so one of the great purposes of marriage is for procreation, so that children can come into this world, they can be loved, nurtured, and brought up to love God. A second key purpose of marriage, Genesis 2:18, I've already commented upon this, is for companionship. This world can be a lonely, hard, difficult place. And God knew that we needed a partner to help us through this world. And one of the key purposes of marriage, and one of the reasons why so many of us wanted to get married, is because we want someone to share our life with. We want someone who will love us and whom we can love. And companionship is a key purpose of marriage. And the third purpose I want to point out, and I really believe this one, and we don't often talk about it, is that marriage is also a place for soul building. In other words, marriage, and I'm not saying that single people are less mature, don't misunderstand me here. But what I am saying is that marriage allows us the opportunity and causes us, because we rub, sometimes, you may laugh at this, like sandpaper against one another. In other words, we're challenged. We sometimes are going to have fusses and arguments and disagreements, and we're going to be humbled. And we're caused to grow and stretch and mature. At least that's the purpose. Now, some people bail, but we don't need to bail. We need to stay with it and stay committed to learn our spouse and to grow as an individual. One of the purposes, and I give you the scriptures, is maturity and growth of the individual. In Ephesians chapter 5, it talks about a sanctifying kind of love. We need to set our spouse apart, understanding they are holy and special. We need to also seek to help them and ourselves be better and closer to God. When you look at Colossians chapter 3, you think about these values that are mentioned there, such as things that are like, listen to this, compassion, kindness,
humility, meekness, patience, forbearance, complaining, forgiving against one another's who have a complaint, love. All those things. Those are things that, yes, we must practice with our brothers and sisters, but the first place we should practice them, and one of the greatest opportunities we have to practice them, and one of the places that it must be practiced, is in our homes. Most homes could be changed if we would just put kindness and humility and forbearance and patience and love. You see, God put us and created marriage so that we could learn and we could practice and we could demonstrate it to the world. You see, thirdly, let me say that we must recognize the Christian's role regarding marriage in this world. And, you know, all of this is coming out of our cultural context. And as I began by saying, the world's saying all these things about marriage. So what is the church going to do? Let me tell you, we're not going to legislate morality. We're not going to fix the marriage problem by electing the right people or changing the laws. We've lost on that one. There is already an acceptance of same-sex marriage legally in our country now. So what are we going to do? Marriage is discarded and divorces are so common. What are we going to do as Christian people? Well, let me suggest three things that we must do. We must model the relationship of Christ and the church. When Paul wrote Ephesians 5:22-33, Paul uses the marriage relationship to depict the relationship between Christ and the church. Our world wants to see Jesus. And one of the ways they look for Jesus is by the way the husband treats the wife and the wife treats the husband. And your marriage is an evangelistic witness to the world about who Jesus is and what Jesus is and what your relationship stands upon. And so if the world is going to change on marriage, it's going to be because they see Christian homes that model Christ in the church. Church must, 1 Timothy 3:15, the pillar and ground of the truth, the church must teach the truth on marriage. No matter what the world says, the elders and the church have a responsibility of still going back to what God says. I've heard it said that the churches of Christ in the next 30 to 40 years will likely or very well may accept homosexuality, and even same-sex marriage. Many churches already have. I'm sure many churches of Christ may in the next 50 years, because many churches of Christ have gone so far in their doctrine in the last 30 years. But it is up to us and future leaders to go back to, what does God say? What does God say? And as you teach your children, they're going to hear everything from friends, from other coworkers. They're going to see things if they watch TV at all. They're going to learn about all the different forms of marriage. You have to teach them. It doesn't matter what all the world says. It matters what God says. And then finally, we must edify and build up our own marriages, and coupled with that, we must live the gospel in our marriages. We must live out these principles and do whatever we can to understand that Satan is attacking marriage. He wants to destroy the witness of Christ and the church. And so we must, as Malachi said, we must guard ourselves. Every one of us that are married are susceptible to a divorce. We're susceptible to adultery. We must always guard ourselves in our spirit and not let Satan take an advantage. And so we must build up our relationships.
As we think about this lesson,
if you are married, let me close by reminding you the words from Ruth, where Ruth says to her mother-in-law, but it makes a great statement for marriage. In verses 16 and 17 of this passage, you've heard it read at many wedding ceremonies. Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts you and me. I have on the screen, don't leave them guessing. Heard that statement made about how we should treat our spouse. In other words, don't leave them guessing that if you have a fight like this couple on the screen that it's going to be the end. Don't leave them guessing about when you're off on a trip, if you're going to be looking pornography, or you're going to be looking or flirting with some girl that you're at work with. Don't leave them guessing. You be committed and let your spouse know you are sold out committed. And it's not an option to quit and walk away from them. Don't leave your children guessing. The greatest thing you can do besides leading your children to the Lord for your children is giving them a witness, an example of a Christian marriage. Don't leave them guessing. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to just request prayer or confess sin in your life, if we can help you in any way, come as together we stand and sing.
Our sin and our guilt, yonder on Calvary's mount outpoured, there where the blood of the Lamb was spilled. Grace, grace, God's grace, grace that will pardon and cleanse within. Grace, grace, God's grace, grace that is greater than all our sin. Dark is the stain that we cannot hide. What can avail to wash it away? Look, there is flowing a crimson tide. Whiter than snow you may be today. Grace, grace, God's grace, grace that will pardon and cleanse within. Grace, grace, God's grace, grace that is greater than all our sin. Marvelous, infinite, matchless grace, freely bestowed on all who believe. You that are longing to see His face, will you this moment His grace receive? Grace, grace, God's grace, grace that will pardon and cleanse within. Grace, grace, God's grace, grace that is greater than all our sin.
Please be seated. I want to let everybody know, tonight there is going to be a meeting for all those wanting to go on the teen mission trip. I want to also say that we need some more to go. We've got plenty of spots. We're taking the bus. And we would also like some more adults to be going. I know it's kind of coming up quickly. But if you've got a free week that you can use to come help be with some kids and do do some VBS down in the Atlanta area. We would love to have you. There is no age limit. You are not too old. You're not too young. And so we would love to have you come and be with us on this trip.
Good morning. We're glad you're here this morning.